Hi, I'm Mark Waite, editor-in-chief of Boom Studios, and I'm here with...
Daphna Plebin, editorial assistant extraordinaire.
And today I am intrigued by our sort of differing opinions here on the internet.
It's a wide subject.
Threat or menace. I'm being facetious, but all right, what brings this to mind is, so I see yesterday that the case of the blogger who wrote an anonymous blog about the supermodel calling her a skank and a hoe, that went to court because the skank hoe, you know, supermodel allegedly, went to court for defamation, sued, won, and so the internet service provider in turn then turned over this woman's, the blogger's quote-unquote anonymous name. Now, the formerly anonymous blogger is now suing the ISP for damages way beyond, like 4.7 million, something like that, because she feels like you shouldn't have given my name over. I am less than sympathetic to her, but I admit that this is colored by the fact that I came to the internet and to message boards as an adult, so I have a slightly different point of view than people who grew into that culture at an earlier age and became part of your moral tapestry at an earlier age. That's not in any way meant to be a...
Is he
mocking me?
No. I'm thinking about the situation because I read up on the article before the podcast started, and I don't have too much pity for her because she put her real name and address. And in terms of growing up with the internet, the first thing you learn is you don't put your real name and address.
Right.
That the ease of creating these alternate identities precludes you. You can create one as the necessity arises.
Okay.
Like if you want to talk crap on some supermodel.
Right.
You don't actually have to use your real name.
Okay.
No one's stopping you.
Right.
No one can stop you.
You can make up anything.
You can make Google accounts are free.
Right. So
you could just make a new one.
How many do you have?
I refuse to answer that question.
All right. So, but I'm, at the same time, there is, and again, don't get me wrong, I'm not coming at this stridently because I want to believe that there are people out there who are much smarter about this stuff than I am, and I want to not be inflexible in my opinion. My gut feeling is to say I have no sympathy for you because I grew up in a culture where you, if you say something, you have to take responsibility for what you said.
But I think in part that responsibility is a privilege that a lot of people don't have.
All right.
They might have careers that hinge on what they say.
Right.
They might be pursuing careers in the field in which they might have very valid concerns.
Right.
So it's very easy, I think, especially for people who, sorry, Mark,
no,
well situated.
Fair enough.
To speak from a position of not necessarily authority, but it's a more solid position accepted by more people because they know you have the experience to speak what you're saying.
That's some of it. It's also that I have, and I freely admit this, that it's easy for me to say, if you're going to say something, put your name to it and own up to it, because I, and God knows, I'm no stranger to saying something stupid and inflammatory. I probably said three stupid and inflammatory things since the timer started 3 minutes ago. But I also have the advantage of I don't have a family, I don't have kids, I don't have a wife, I have no one else who is held accountable if I do anything stupid. If I choose to risk my job, or if I choose to risk my reputation, or if I choose to do this or that by saying whatever I say, no one else pays a penalty but me. So it's much easier for me to say, look, stand up for it and put your money where your mouth is. It's harder if you've got a kid. It's harder if you've got an elderly parent that depends on you for income or whatever. I'm pulling stuff out of the air, but you know what I'm saying.
No, but you're making the argument for me. Like, yeah. I don't have to do anything here. Thanks, Mark.
My pleasure.
Completely
and
useless.
That's 5 minutes of Mark Waite. Thank you. No, but at the same time, yeah.
That's another form of coming into the internet with expectations that might not necessarily line up with the majority of expectations these people are coming from.
Right.
For example, this idea of the internet, and when I say this, some of you will picture the exact spelling of serious business.
Yes.
And bear in mind, there are no vowels
right,
in what I've just said.
Yeah.
The idea that if you say something on the internet, like calling someone a skank or a liar,
mm-hmm.
that it actually has a real-world effect. Now, it does. There's no denying, especially you're seeing with, you know, these stories coming out of cyberbullying of students getting bullied by the parents of their friends.
Right, exactly, yeah, yeah.
There is one thing to say, well, it doesn't matter, it's the internet, and it's another thing entirely to feel it.
Right.
So there's no denying that rationally or no, the internet shouldn't have an effect on your day-to-day life.
Right.
Doesn't change the fact that it does.
It does, exactly.
So that's why this issue is so important. But at the same time, I think it's evidence of the growing pains that we're going through as a society,
yeah,
on dealing with this whole new organism that now exists in our everyday life.
This is why I want to talk about it, because I think you have a interesting point of view in that I tend to approach it, and I think most everybody over the age of 40 tends to approach it with, because again, we didn't grow up with this, with the idea that the rules, the mores, the sort of the morality that we tend to attach to everyday life, or the way we behave with it, the social mores, that's, I guess, mm-hmm, what I'm trying to say. Thank you, editing. The social mores that we behave under, we have a certain degree of expectation because we're not used to dealing with the internet. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say in my stupid babbling way is that it's easy for me to define how we should and shouldn't talk about each other or treat each other or behave if I'm talking about church socials, which I went to when I was six, or, you know, or what it's like, you know, at a party, the way you should or shouldn't be, because everybody knows from it. But we're talking about a whole different social dynamic with a surprisingly different number of rules and a surprisingly various number of rules. So
it's the idea that there are rules that I think that is still tripping people up, like this internet blogger who put her real name and address,
right,
in a Google information because she thinks that there are these unwritten rules, mm-hmm, that dictate how you approach this new medium.
Right.
Oh, they're asking for my name, so I'll put my real name.
Right.
It's learning these new rules, the ones that don't apply, the ones that might have an amorphous definition now,
right,
such as honesty.
All right, but why should these rules not apply?
Because I think the benefits of the internet outweigh getting your feelings hurt.
I think that's true, but let's talk more specific about it.
Well, like in terms of, I think the internet has now, and we see this a lot of times, especially in comic discussion, especially with the influx of new readers, of seeing the readers that have always been there but never had a voice.
Right.
So comic stores and conventions tend to be, in the past, a very homogeneous group.
Yes.
It's people who feel comfortable in each other's presence.
Yeah.
So they tend to act alike and look alike, i.e., and I don't know, yeah, if I'm going to have to edit this out,
yeah,
white males.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that women haven't been reading comics.
Right.
That doesn't mean that minorities haven't been reading comics.
Right.
It means that they haven't been comfortable in the places that have been traditionally the face of comics.
That makes sense. They're not as comfortable engaging in the conversation. They're not as comfortable in presenting themselves to engage in the conversation.
Exactly. Like, I mean, I've been reading comics since I was 8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have that origin story as every other comic reader is, and there was a
Sandman
store.
It was Sandman, wasn't it?
Oh, totally.
Of course,
yeah,
it was Sandman.
I don't read comics. I read graphic novels,
yeah,
Mark.
Yeah. We love
we've got guns to our heads right now.
The gateway drug of all.
I was working in a store,
yeah,
and we'd get these new readers.
Yeah.
I don't read comics. I read graphic novels. Well, what do you read? Well, I really like Watchmen and Sandman. Like, those were released in 22-page floppies,
mm-hmm,
over a span of months.
Yeah.
Those are comic books.
They're comic books.
Own up.
Yeah.
Suck it up.
Exactly.
You're one of us.
They're exactly.
But that's a detour.
Well, let's get back to the notion of, okay, so at, because again, I'm very curious about this. There is a line between calling somebody a skank and a hoe on the internet and being busted and having to own up to it, and genuinely whistleblowing on something that, you know, if you're working for a tobacco company and you find out that they're putting heroin in the filters and you want to blow them out, but you've got a wife and a child, you should be able to whistleblow without having everything taken away from you. It's a very fat line between those two things, because they're the extremes.
Well, but there's also, they're the extremes, and you could weigh which is more of a benefit versus which is more of a loss,
right,
in terms of. But I also think that middle ground of a space where discussions can take place between people who don't ordinarily associate,
right,
outweighs everything. I think what we gain from that,
right,
makes this question of taking, I cannot say this word, please say it for me, Mark.
It's right here. I spelled it.
I can't
phonetically
say it. And anonymity. I can't
so
do
close
it. Anonymity.
Anonymity. That's
yes
it. Yes.
Bastardized English by Daphne Plubin.
I am a college student.
I am.
I are a college student. So.
I think that benefit outweighs, you know, taking the lumps with the sugar.
All right. So take me back to the formative question, which is, why is it acceptable to be anonymous on the internet and be able to throw? It's a loaded question, but why is it acceptable to be anonymous on the internet and throw, you know, grenades from the safety of your anonymous name?
Well, I think there's a, it's back to that culture shock and growing pains of dealing with the internet right now.
Mm-hmm.
As with any new technology, that stuff is being taken seriously.
Right.
I promise you, when my brother is far more, like, when I found out that he was on Last FM 2 years before I was,
yeah,
it blew my mind. Okay, I was like, right, this is a little person,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
with his own life. Oh, yeah. Crap, I'm old. But I think when the generation that has lived with the internet from the very moment they're born,
right,
where people's home videos exist in a Googleable, searchable form,
right,
I think that generation is going to take those lumps,
okay,
with a bit more understanding.
So
like, right now there's the issue of Facebook,
right,
and bosses and employees on Facebook.
Right.
And bosses seeing employees maybe drinking or saying something on Facebook and using that as a reason to do something in the real world.
Right.
I think as we progress and those bosses become kids who had Facebooks when they were in college,
right,
a lot of things are going to become excusable.
That makes sense.
It's going to be understandable. It's going to be, we all come from this same place of, yeah, of lack of privacy.
That becomes part of the language, the corporate language. I agree that, and that makes sense. I
mean, it's our generation's pot.
Okay.
All the hippies that are, right, parents now,
yeah,
like, you know, they look back on that phone, oh, we were just kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Facebook is our generation's mind-numbing.
Because right now, it'll rot your brain. You got to be, mm-hmm, careful with it. And you're right, and eventually it'll be kids and their Facebook. No, it's true. I still think we're ducking around the core question. I'm trying to find a way to phrase it where it doesn't sound like a fait accompli when I say it. Are you saying that, is your theory that the internet becomes, in the generations to come, becomes more anonymous or less anonymous?
I'm saying that it's going to matter less than it does now.
Okay.
In the sense that it's going to be the same thing as, and it's a new technology, it's not like comparing it with the Gutenberg press, but
right,
it's this idea of, you don't go into a bookstore, mm-hmm, close your eyes, randomly pick up a book off the shelf,
right,
and say, this romance novel is an example of the entire medium of literature.
Right.
And this is crap.
Right.
Therefore, all literature is crap. You don't do that because you understand that it's a medium,
right,
not a message.
Exactly.
So I think there's going to be an understanding that there's behavior on the internet,
mm-hmm,
that doesn't necessarily reflect reality.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So in other words, the and this gets back to what you said earlier, the idea that the generation of people who get their feelings hurt by the anonymous nature of, despite the anonymous nature of the internet, that will start to go away. Like the coming generations will not take that as seriously, or not take. Okay, that makes,
yeah,
sense.
It's sort of like, you know, you get a sensation, you become dead to it after a while. It's a constant white noise.
If only I became.
If
dead
only.
To,
no, but I mean,
cry myself to sleep at night. Oh,
we're saying this all,
yeah,
rationally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's saying it like, well, obviously it's not real. Obviously, it's just some one person on the internet. It shouldn't matter that much.
Right.
It doesn't change the fact that we might feel it.
Right,
it doesn't change the fact that someone saying crappy about you online,
right,
won't have a real effect.
Right.
I just think we're going to have more perspective.
Yes. No, that's fair. I think that you're right. I think our mores are going to change. I think our expectations are going to change. I think that clearly, and this is almost the topic for a whole other podcast, but I mean, it's so clear that just the act of interacting with the web and being on the net rewires your brain. It absolutely does. I mean, it not just, I mean,
destroys your attention span.
Destroys your attention span. For A, it destroys your attention span, but more than that, it also, for instance, you know, and this is just one example, the part of my brain that had to memorize all the state capitals,
you just Google it now,
doesn't exist anymore because I don't need it to exist. I have a magic phone that's 3x5 inches and with almost faster than I can recall it, or certainly faster than I can do a mnemonic to get there.
Our neurons are getting outsourced.
Yes, exactly. That's right. Exactly. That place in our memory that needs to know the 38 presidents before Carter, oh God, that was wrong, but whatever. needs to know the first 45 presidents. They don't need to know that anymore. Again, how many times a day do you go to IMDb to look stuff up?
Well, I mean, how do I go to my Gmail? Like, I've got things saved in drafts and Gmail, in documents, in calendar. I have them send me a reminder so I don't have to work that reflex that reminds me of things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's even to the point of how we tell our stories.
Yeah.
Like, have you seen hypertext literature?
Yes.
Where you can tell a story with this understanding of a shared canon, almost.
Yes.
Of everyone has access to the same resources. Everyone can look up what you're talking about on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So it changes what we can talk about.
This is
what, because now we have access to everything.
This brings it back to comics, but this is a good place to end it, but that's what Grant was going for with Final Crisis. I mean, you know, like it or hate it, that was, you know, Grant was basically writing it as one giant hypertext with the idea that we don't have to know everything about this guy or that guy or whatever, because we can all look it up. It's part of, to him, and I just think he's a little bit ahead of his time, that to him, that's part of the fun of it.